Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. I hope you're doing well. Are you doing well? I really do hope so. If you're in the U.S. and you've been snowed upon, I hope the blizzard wasn't too bad. I hope you were able to pay some local teenage kids to shovel out the driveway for you. You know, there's always good money to be made if you are a teenager in a snowy region. There's good money to be made if you've got a strong back and a shovel, or even a snowblower would do very nicely for you. Make a little extra cash. Buy some books with it. It'll be great. I know how you kids love to spend your money on books. So, what's going on? This week, not a whole lot for me. It's been pretty quiet. I spent a lot of time resting and relaxing in bed this weekend, which is fun in its own strange way. But I got a big box of books from Amazon. Oh, got some great stuff. Let me check it out for a sec. Let's see, I got Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which everybody's told me about and everybody says is fantastic and massively depressing, and I haven't read it yet. Now I've got it. And what else? I've got The Science of Fear by Daniel Gardner, a book by David Wong called John Dies in the End. There we go. Adventures Among the Ants by Mark Moffat. I saw him, I think, on Colbert or Daily Show. I can't keep track of them. And Brandon Sanderson's The Way of Kings, which everybody was telling me I need to read. As well as a couple of comics. I got the Dresden File comic, Welcome to the Jungle, which was pretty good. Not too bad. But I think Dresden works much better as a novel than as a comic. And Invincible, the fifth collection. So I got a good big box of books, which is always nice. Always good. But that is not why we're here. Not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about, well, books, yes. So I gave you a clue as to the identity of this week's book. I said that the title of this book was a punctuation joke, and boy, did I get some good responses from people. The winner, of course, was Marissa from the U.S., and Marissa correctly guessed that we are going to talk about Eats, Shoots, and Leaves by Lynn Truss. So congratulations, Marissa. A large box of semicolons is on its way to you. I would also like to congratulate Kion, my dear sister, who also got it right, and Paul and Vanessa from Spain, who got it right. So nice. I've got a good sort of punctuationally aware audience here, which is very, very good. It makes me happy. Because this is the kind of book that people who pay really, really picky attention to detail love. So let me tell you about this book. This is, by the way, how I know that I really, really am an English teacher. I have a whole shelf dedicated to books just about English. The history of English, the uses of English, the misuses of English, even the history of our alphabet. This is something, honestly, I never expected to have in my personal library. You know, when I was younger and I had all the fantasies and the comics, I still have them, but I never expected to have a whole shelf just dedicated to language. But that's kind of to be expected, really. I'm an English teacher, and people like me are supposed to read books like this. It's, you know, professional development or something like that. The weird thing about this book, though, it's a book dedicated to punctuation, but it was popular with people who weren't English teachers. Everybody was shocked by how well it sold. I mean, even the author. A book written as sort of a primal scream for sticklers somehow struck a chord with the general reading population. Maybe there's some hope for our species after all. I don't know. The reason, of course, that it sold well is that it is well written and it's entertaining to read. A lot of books about language are written by these dusty intellectual linguists who exude smugness with their impenetrable jargon and are completely inaccessible by the general public. I'm talking to you, Chomsky. Yeah. He listens to the podcast. I have no evidence of this, but I believe he does, so why not? I have some of those books on my shelves as well. You know, you kind of have to. And really, nothing this side of a double shot of NyQuil is as good at getting me off into slumberland as those books. Ms. Truss, however, writes like one of us. She's an ordinary person who loves her language and just snaps every time she sees a sign that says apples, APPLE, apostrophe S, $1. And I share her pain. The book is a well-mixed combination of history, usage, and style. These tiny marks that make the written English word behave the way it does have come to us along a remarkable number of paths. In the last millennium or so, marks have been added and changed and removed over time as necessity dictated. One of her fears, and the impetus to write this book, is that we may be changing English into a new form that requires less of that rigid, form-fixing punctuation. Or, alternatively, that people just haven't bothered to learn it. I mean, as she notes throughout the book, punctuation really is one of those things that few people ever really get to learn. Our English teachers give us a once-over in elementary school, and then we never get a review of it or anything, so we spend most of our lives just throwing around commas and apostrophes and hoping we get it right. More often than not, though, we don't. And we're afraid to ask anyone, lest we look like, you know, ignorant yobs. But to master punctuation really means more than just being a pedant and a nerd. Heavens no. Mastering punctuation means controlling your language, which in turn is controlling your thoughts. The vast difference between a sentence like, "The convict said the judge is mad," and "The convict, comma, said the judge, comma, is mad," really should be enough by itself to illustrate how important proper punctuation is. There's another one, you know, "Let's eat grandma" versus "Let's eat, comma, grandma." Punctuation saves lives, people. In a language like English, which is so dependent on rhythm and timing and stress, punctuation is the substitute for our voice. It tells us when to speed up and when to slow down, which points need to be stressed and given special attention, and which points, parentheses, like this one, close parentheses, can be safely disregarded if one so chooses. It'd be very easy for Ms. Truss's obvious frustration with the misuse of punctuation to just overwhelm her and poison the book. Admittedly, she does at one point put together a kit for those who would be punctuation guerrillas and risk prison to set the world straight, but by and large, she stops short at advocating actual lawlessness. Ms. Truss understands that punctuation abuse isn't something people do intentionally. It's largely a matter of just ignorance. And she wants to help. And what's more, she's funny. I loved this passage. I really enjoyed this. She says, "In the family of punctuation, where the full stop is the daddy and the comma is the mummy, and the semicolon quietly practices the piano with crossed hands, the exclamation mark is the big attention deficit brother who gets overexcited and breaks things and laughs too loudly." Every section in the book has these sharp and clever humor, a description of something as simple as a comma made in such a way that you find yourself just laughing out loud on the train. Of course, whenever you do get into this topic, you do run the risk of finding yourself forced to one side or the other of the proscriptive versus descriptive debate. You know, the people who want to tell everyone else how to use language versus the people who want the speakers to decide for themselves how it's used. The latter, though, just smacks of classical democracy, and as both an English professional and a person with a healthy distrust of the people, I'm hesitant to sign up for it. I like rules in language. I like having a common set of guidelines we can turn to in order to make sure we're all getting the meaning that the speaker or the writer is trying to convey. Unfortunately for people like Truss or myself, it's all too easy to cross that line from being the person who appreciates a bit of order to the person who writes letters to the editor because some headline writer used a colon where obviously a semicolon would do. And I've seen these internet flame wars just go wild over this pro or D divide. People who could probably politely disagree with each other about Sarah Palin's international policy experience will find themselves screaming bloody murder over whether or not you should put two spaces after a period. What has to be remembered is this. There are rules to language, whether you like it or not. These rules, however, do change, and no single one of us has any power to impel or obstruct that change. The best we can do is make sure we are writing with clarity and precision so that our intended audience understands our thoughts with the least amount of effort on their part. Regardless of what you think of the rules, if the reader has to stop and ask herself, "Wait, what did he say?" then you've failed. So learn the rules. Once you've learned them, you're free to do what you wish, but make sure you have them down cold. So if you've always wanted to know about how to use a semicolon, or if you're not sure if your commas are in the right place, or if you've ever driven someone to madness by dropping an apostrophe into a possessive "it's," and you know who you are, then this book is the one you need. Please enjoy. Let me give you a quote. And talking about the apostrophe, which does seem to be her real bugbear in this book, she says, "Using the apostrophe correctly is a mere negative proof. It tells the world that you are not a thicko," which is true. One of the interesting things, by the way, about living in Japan is that there is a much more freestyle approach to punctuation, and you can't get that angry over here when the punctuation is wrong, because it's not native punctuation. Japanese actually requires very little in the way of punctuation, so You can see some very funny stuff over here. Just sort of let it slide off your back, because you know it's not the native language. They're doing the best. But I do admit, you know, I'll be reading something and see a comma where there should be no comma, and possessive it or Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, where clearly they meant Y-O-U-R. It's something that I think happens to you when you really begin to read a lot and write a lot and love the language. But I do try not to let it overwhelm me. Anyway, that is the book. It is a fun book. I hope you enjoy it. Whether you agree with, you know, her whole position that we have to have fixed rigid rules of punctuation or not, and she's not nearly as rigid as some people have pointed her out to be, but she is certainly dedicated. I do highly recommend picking up this book. Good fun. Eats, Shoots, and Leaves by Lynn Truss. So, that brings us to our book for next week. Now, next week is the last Thursday in the month. That means it is time once again for The Dark Tower. Next week, we will be looking at Book 4, Wizard and Glass, which most objective observers have decided is probably the best book of the series, and I tend to agree. There's a lot of good stuff in the earlier books, but I do think Wizard and Glass is probably the best. So we're all in for a treat next week. So let me give you a riddle to ponder this week. This one is not so much a riddle as it is a logic problem, but I've always liked it because it used to give me headaches. And it runs kind of like this. You may have heard it before. Brothers and sisters, I have none. But that man's father is my father's son. Who is that man? So, figure it out. If you start to get nosebleeds or massive headaches and you start to hear things, just lie down and take a breather. Which is what I have to do right now, actually. I don't know if you know Dropbox, which is a wonderful application that I really, really like. It's basically an online storage thing. It's complicated and wonderful. Just go to dropbox.com. If they ask who sent you, tell them I did. But they've done this whole new sort of marketing thing called the Drop Quest, where you have to go around the internet doing puzzles. They got puzzles, and you know I like puzzles and I like riddles, and so I started to get a little bit obsessive with that, and that's what I'm doing right now. And when I'm done with recording this, it'll be back to Drop Quest to try and figure it out and see where I went wrong. I'm in the middle of a Sudoku puzzle that's not working for me. But I want to thank you all for listening, as always. I hope that you are reading something good. I hope that you are doing something fun and enjoying yourselves. And I will see you all next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.